The antidepressant drug Prozac is now available in a mint-flavored liquid to better serve the 8 million school children that now take psychotropic drugs. This leads us to ask, what are we feeding our children?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 561st edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends up there in Aberdeen who are tuned in as we stream along the Food Chain page at www.metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with engineer Dave Michaels on the boards. Hello, Dave.
Glad to be here.
Producer Carol Stafford on the phone.
So hello there.
Folks, I was recently told of how children as young as 1 year are being fed psychotropic drugs like the mint-flavored liquid Prozac. Thinking it a tall tale and intent on proving it not so, I began digging and immediately turned up the story of a 4-year-old Rebecca Riley, who died last December from an overdose of psychotropic drugs. At the age of 2, little Rebecca was diagnosed as being bipolar by a psychiatrist, who then prescribed a regime of psychotropic drugs, which were then administered by Rebecca's parents. But instead of helping Rebecca, the regime of drugs ate away at her internal organs until her 4-year-old body simply gave up. Little Rebecca is not the only child diagnosed as mentally challenged these days. In fact, the number of children diagnosed bipolar has increased 40-fold since 1994. 40-fold. And now there are an estimated 8 million school children being fed psychotropic drugs throughout the United States and Canada. And so today we pause to ask, what are we feeding our children? And here to help us find an answer, we have Carl Hoffauer with the Citizens Commission on Human Rights. Carl, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thank you for having me.
Pleasure to have you aboard. What is the Citizens Commission on Human Rights?
Well, we're an organization, we're a nonprofit that is a watchdog group of the psychiatric industry. We were co-founded in 1969 by parishioners of the Church of Scientology, and the most well-known psychiatrist speaking about the abuses of psychiatry, Dr. Thomas Zaws, who is an emeritus professor of psychiatry at New York Syracuse University. And our mission is to document and expose psychiatric violations of human rights, and consequently, we've been working to clean up the field of mental health for just over 38 years now. We are 275 chapters in 33 countries around the world. So,
that's quite an organization.
We are a large network, and so it's one of the things that when I discuss with people, legislators, advocates about the state of psychiatry and how they treat people, how they genuinely treat people behind closed doors and behind the walls of their institutions. I'm not giving you my viewpoint of Silicon Valley, California, or even the United States. Every year, we meet twice a year with people from Japan, Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, Italy, Germany, France, England, Mexico, Canada, literally around the world to get an update on the state of affairs.
And well, Carl, we always ask our guests who pays their way, who pays the way for the Citizens Commission on Human Rights.
We rely on the donations from kind people around the world who feel that our mission is important enough to donate money to.
Mm-hmm.
Many people a few people have asked if the Church of Scientology supports us financially. And I just chuckle and say, I wish. I wish that I worked for 17 years in healthcare before retiring just last month so I can pursue this full time. And more than 50% of my time is spent calling up individuals and asking them for their donations. So we receive money only from individuals and other philanthropic organizations that are charitable foundations that make grants to nonprofits to keep us running.
Well, good. And not with us today is the American Psychiatric Association, who whose 35,000 members are way too busy to join us today, so they're off someplace else. Carl,
well,
why won't they talk
with you?
Actually,
just on that one thing, I did want to say this thing. It's not surprising. In 2005, the leadership of the American Psychiatric Association started speaking out when a certain celebrity brought up the idea of the pseudoscience of psychiatry. And
was that celebrity Tom Cruise?
Possibly. But
possibly.
The greater point here, though, is that a national debate was finally brought up to the forefront, which was, and as you talked about the tragedy of Rebecca Riley, we drug more children in this country for misbehavior than any other nation in the world. And when it comes to speaking out about why they do that, psychiatrists have done more to damage their credibility when they open their mouths than any other evidence we could show. And so I would have loved to have another psychiatrist on here, because we just let them talk and they expose how ridiculous their pseudoscience is and how really they don't know what's going on. And I had a video clip I could show you of the former director of the research for the American Psychiatric Association, who goes on and on and on about how they have no idea what causes mental illness, how they have no idea really what they're doing, and they hope someday to really figure it out, and that the entire subject of chemical imbalance, he believed, was really a marketing ploy pushed by drug companies to help explain what their drugs do, but there's really no evidence that any chemical imbalance in the brain affects anything in what somebody does in their behavior.
Well, is that why the American Psychiatric Association wouldn't show up today?
I can't speak for them, but you can speculate. Since 2005, the amount of times where they have responded, besides saying we have no comment, has been about 100%. They have decided that the best thing for them to do is not say anything, which is fine by me. But
let's start it off then and just say goodbye to the American Psychiatric Association. So sorry that they couldn't show up and talk with us today, because we really would have loved to hear what they had to say about this. You know, when it was pointed out to me that Prozac, the drug Prozac, now comes in a mint-flavored liquid that can be administered to children as young as 1 year old. I just couldn't believe it. So I started digging around, and it doesn't take much digging to turn up the fact that we've gone crazy with respect to how we're feeding our children.
Well, unfortunately, what this is the consequence of the mental health industry running amok and continuing to come back and saying that we need more money and we need more access to more individuals. And really, when you look at it from how much money these guys make, it's actually an impressive marketing campaign that they have left the venues that we would normally think psychiatry would stay, which would be in mental institutions, caring for people who, when life gets too much for them and they need to have some asylum.
Oh, so they're not hanging around mental institutions.
We're shutting down mental institutions left, right, and center across the country. Mm-hmm. California's been doing it since the federal government, actually, it was under the Kennedy administration, started to pay extra money to counties if they would treat people with mental illness diagnosis in the community rather than sending them to these large institutions. And part of that came about because there was a huge cry about the abuses and the terrible conditions people were being treated in these institutions. And, really one of the galvanizing moments was actually that movie called One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest,
Jack Nicholson. Yeah,
exactly, and that was a great watershed of change in that time. And it wasn't actually, that movie came about in the early 70s.
So what you're saying is that not only did we turn the inmates out of the asylum, we turned the psychiatrists out of the asylum as well. Is that what you're saying?
That's one of the most tragic effects, is that psychiatrists were allowed to get out of institutions and get into our communities. And so now we have children who daydream, who fidget, being labeled with a mental disorder. We have children who can't read, who can't write, who have difficulties doing math, being labeled with a mental disorder. And the problem is that when we talk about mental disorders, originally when they were written about, it was a metaphor for their bad behavior when they talked about a mental illness. It was never really intended to be construed as a physical illness. But unfortunately, through the translations, this is based on Dr. Zaz's most recent paper on Freud, that there is no word for mind in French or German, and that it was translated incorrectly when it came over to the English to believe that the mind was, instead of was an actual organ versus the brain. And we started to have this metaphorical change into actual illness, where people thought schizophrenia, instead of it being described as a person listening to the sounds that their own mind generates, that it was an actual physical illness, that ADHD, attention deficit, is a physical illness. There's no evidence to show that ever was, and really it's a tragic error that's been going on for over 100 years.
Okay, we're going to have to take a quick break, Dr. Hoffhauer.
Sure.
But when we get back, I'm going to ask you about the children and why so many are now so sick. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're talking about drugging our children, 8 million of them now that we're drugging. Phone numbers today, 800-624-2665, 831-4798. Pick up your phone and join us today. We will be right back after these messages, so please do stay tuned.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. MetroFarm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. MetroFarm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. MetroFarm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of MetroFarm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Well, at the age of 2, little Rebecca was diagnosed as being bipolar by a psychiatrist, who then prescribed a regime of psychotropic drugs, which were then administered by Rebecca's parents. But instead of helping Rebecca, the regime of drugs ate away at her internal organs until the tiny little 4-year-old's body simply gave up, and Rebecca died. Rebecca is not the only child diagnosed as being mentally challenged these days. In fact, there has been a increase of 40-fold since 1994 of the children being diagnosed as bipolar. And of course, there are many other diagnoses, attention deficit disorder, and what this and that, this and that, compulsive behavior things, and so we really seem to be focusing a lot of attention on our children. And today, as a consequence, we're giving about 8 million school children psychotropic drugs to force them into submission, I guess you might call it. Is that right, Dr. Carl Hoffhauer? Let's see, I better grab you here. There, I got you.
Since the mid-90s, there has been greater pressure on parents to use psychotropic drugs on their children. Part of it came about with the revision of the Bible of psychiatric diagnosis and billing called the DSM, or Diagnostic and Statistical Manual. Although, I always...
What is that? Now, you talked about billing?
Yeah, because psychiatrists bill your health insurance when they see your children and label them with attention deficit disorder, math disorder, creative writing disorder, all of these whole host of children.
I had them all, by the way, when I was a kid.
Well, it's hard not for anyone not to have these. They're so broad in general. Just going back to ADHD or attention deficit, the child has to have 6 or more of the symptoms of inattention or hyperactivity in the past 6 months, which has always, to the more sane neurologist that I've spoken to, and I've asked them about this, they go, well, it's pretty difficult, because what if the child only has 5? Does that mean they don't have it? And then if they 6, oh, they absolutely have it. And if they have 7, is that a more severe case? But when you look at it, for all the criteria, every single point says often. Often does this, often fails to do that, often does not seem to listen when spoken to directly. And so when you see the criteria, most people start chuckling because, just like you, Michael, you look at it and you go, but that was me. That's normal human behavior. The difficulty is with the word often with no definition because it becomes subjective. Mm-hmm. It is, how much does this child annoy you? Do they annoy you a lot? Well, then you might be more inclined to give them this label. If they don't annoy you at all, you probably would forgive those little transgressions of inattention or failure to follow directions or to speak up for not raising their hand. And that was one of the criteria in here, was that they interrupt. And they said, well, what do you mean by interrupt? And they said, well, you know, like blur out the answer before raising their hand. And I thought, that's not a disease. That's an excited child. So that's the difficulty we have, is that...
Okay, but let's go back to this billing thing that you brought up.
Sure.
Okay, given... I'm sure that I would have been drugged as a school kid. There's no doubt in my mind, because I had a hard time paying attention in class. I had a hard time sitting still, and on and on and on and on. And I'm sure I would be drugged to the gills today, I guess, if modern the school system got their hands on me. But and I'm sure that there really isn't any precise way of knowing what the heck we're doing here. But I'm trying to get back to this, why we're drugging all of these kids. And you brought up something very interesting, and that's a billing statement.
Correct.
Take me back there. And you said that psychiatrists bill insurance companies. Okay, what do insurance companies say?
Well, insurance companies in California are mandated, as of 1999, they have been forced to cover a whole litany of mental illnesses and pay for them as if you had a genuine illness like heart disease or diabetes. And, you know, with diabetes, you can test someone's blood and see how much their blood sugar is and tell them whether or not they have a disorder or not. Heart disease, the same way. ADHD, you can't test for it. There's no MRI brain scan or blood test you can do to say you have this mental disorder or that one. So what psychiatrists do is they do an interview, they listen to the parent or the teacher or both, and then they make a decision to put down a diagnosis that is in their book. And attention deficit disorder is attention deficit, let's see, it's 314.8. So you send that to insurance. Insurance is forced by state law to cover that. And so they will cover that, and it's essentially unlimited. Most mental health disorders had a cap of, we will give you this much treatment and no more. And once you run out, that's it for the year or for the lifetime.
You're talking about a gold mine.
Absolutely, because, you know, the original DSM back in the 50s was only less than 100 disorders. And every time they have a new conference to discuss this, it thickens. And it's gone from less than a quarter inch to, well, the book I have in front of me right now is a good 2.5 inches thick. There's over 357 ways to bill now versus how they used to bill 20 or 30 years ago. So the more times you label some behavior as a mental illness, you've just increased your patient population. You've taken normal people and suddenly given them a label of a disorder, and that's a better, bigger patient population. When it came to the use of stimulants, the most common drug prescribed to children is some sort of Schedule II stimulant, Ritalin, Concerta, mm-hmm. Adderall. And
it's speed, right? We're talking speed.
They're all speeds, yes. Mm-hmm. Concerta and Ritalin are a type of what are called methylphenidate, and those actually have more of a cocaine-like effect on your brain. And Adderall is amphetamine. So, and many times we'll even see patients where the doctor or the psychiatrist just prescribed Dexedrine because they understand that it's the same toxicology principle. If you give anyone a low dose of a stimulant, you get the opposite effect. And people have experienced that with the depressant alcohol. Large doses of alcohol causes you to fall asleep and can cause coma and death. Small doses, though, give you an opposite effect. People feel lightheaded, a little giddy, a little more excited, a little more boisterous. That's basic toxicology. And ever since I took my first class in toxicology back in 1991, and then I compared that to how they treat children with these stimulants, I went, oh, well, that's all that they're doing. And these psychiatrists continue to turn out these case reports and studies saying, well, we theorize it's this part of the brain. And I just start chuckling because why the voice of reason doesn't come through and say, you know, we know it's a categorical fact that if you give anyone a low dose of a stimulant, you will mellow them out a bit. And if you give them a higher dose, you'll anyone who has a high dose of amphetamines will have a better ability to concentrate. It's one of the reasons why we give it to pilots. We in the military when they fly across the country or when they're flying across the ocean.
Sure.
I've got
Ann on the phone who's a teacher here. Before we go to the break, I want to pick her up really quickly. Ann, welcome to the food chain.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I taught school 48 years ago, and then I went into business. And when I moved to Santa Cruz, I worked as a TA with a friend in kindergarten. And I cannot believe, at that time, there were 32 children in the class and 7 boys were on Ritalin. And it's my opinion that nowadays, on the play yard, they can't have any kind of really physical exercise because they might get injured. They're set in front of a television. They're set in front of a computer. And most of the behavior that I saw when I was teaching 48 years ago, nowadays would be considered you have to put them on drugs. It's really a shame. Children nowadays do not have an outlet. Their parents are so afraid they're going to be kidnapped. They're so afraid that they're going to be injured. And I think it's a whole sickness with our society that parents are working too much and they don't spend quality time with the children. And I think it's criminal. I really do. I mean, to put children that young on drugs is just awful. And that's just all I have to say.
Well, and you did a great job of saying it, folks. This is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're talking children with Carl Hoffauer, and who is from the Citizens Commission on Human Rights. And, of course, we're talking with you, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Do you believe that we should be drugging our children into submission? We have 8 million of them out there on drugs, our school kids. What is going to happen to them? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back. Well, if you think about it, drugs are about the easiest way of going about things. You know, those little kids get to acting up, and if you're a school, you don't want them running around out there risking lawsuits, getting hurt or whatnot. And if you're a parent, you don't want to spend a lot of time dealing with an overactive child, so you drug them into submission. And if you're a psychiatrist, 357 ways to bill the insurance company. Is that right, Carl?
That's correct.
357 ways to bill for mental conditions of children. And it's incredible.
One of the things I'd like to say is that I want to thank Anne for coming out and telling us about her experience, because I've spoken to retired teachers and they always have been shaking their head and say, I don't understand what's gone on.
What's going on?
Why?
Well, I don't either. And I was a kid, you know, when those people were teaching, I was a student, and you know, obviously, I would have been in deep trouble, as would most of my class, I guess.
Well, this is what I discovered: is that psychiatrists put together this book that said, if you have these behaviors, you have this condition, and this condition is best taken care of by taking this drug. And then they went to drug companies and said, we need money to go and tell the world about how we're going to be treating people. And so they got educational grants to go and speak to various communities and also to universities. And they went in and they started infiltrating into the curriculum of how we train our teachers across this country, so that teachers, when they're newly minted out of school, they believe that a child who fidgets is manifesting a disease. And so, unfortunately, that's what the state of affairs across America has been, is that they enlisted teachers in the efforts to have them round up more patients for them. When I speak with the special education instructors that I've spoken to, 3 of them here in Santa Clara County, they said that they are compelled by their director to pull out the piece of paper that is the checkoff list for behaviors to assess whether or not they are having ADHD or not. Then they're told, they call the parent in and say, we believe your child has some sort of a mental disorder that's causing them not to achieve in school. And then they tell them these dire predictions of how if they don't treat it now, it'll turn worse, their child will fail school, become a drug addict, and be someone who's incarcerated for the rest of their life. So, of course, most caring parents are saying, oh, my gosh. Let me go do something about this. They bring them to their pediatrician or they bring them to a psychiatrist, depending on what their insurance covers. And depending on the doctor, if the medical doctor just looks at the DSM or they look at their own drug rep supplied materials, then of course it's irresistible to give a child the diagnosis if you're following what these guys recommend. Versus being objective and looking at the entire state of affairs and going, wait a minute, this is normal childhood behavior that has been roped into a category of being a disease, and I'm not going to give them an addictive stimulant that, thank God, this year the FDA finally listened to their advisory committee and put out a warning that stroke, heart attack, and sudden death is a strong consequence of children who are put on these stimulants for long periods of time.
And you know, what about tiny Rebecca? Let's talk about what impacts these drugs have on the human body. Do we know what happens to kids or to children when we drug them like this?
No, we don't know the long-term effects. In fact, most of the time when these are, in fact, I just looked up Prozac. When Prozac was studied in children, it was studied for 13 weeks. So when you think about this mint-flavored liquid Prozac that they're pouring down the throats of these infants that Lord knows, you know, how they could come up with this indecency of saying that an infant has a mental disorder. That they pour this stuff down their throat and they only studied it for 13 weeks. In my opinion, I go, great, then you can only use it for 13 weeks. If you even want to do that horrible thing, you shouldn't be using it more than 13 weeks because it's never been studied longer than that. But that isn't how it operates. You can use it as long as you want. And unfortunately, Rebecca was one of these poor children who, at 2 years old, was stuck on psychiatric drugs.
And for 2 years?
Exactly.
From the age of two to the age of four, she was on psychotropic drugs. Incredible.
And here's the terrible thing, is that she wasn't just on one, she was on several psychiatric drugs. And this again exposes psychiatry for what it's really about. When a child, when anyone gets put on these psychotropic drugs, they have hundreds of side effects. Unfortunately, when a side effect is manifesting, the psychiatrist then says, oh, this is a new mental disorder, and they give them another psychiatric drug. And it's routine. We see that in the most captive population are children in foster care. Those children are drugged up to the gills with psychotropic drugs. But what you see with Rebecca is that these parents were complying with the psychiatrist's directions because they were scared that Child Protective Services was going to remove this child. And so you've got the state coming in and pressuring these parents to follow, quote, a doctor's orders. Unfortunately, it's a psychiatrist. And then when they follow it, what happens? Their daughter dies. And their daughter wasn't the first. Their daughter wasn't the first. Their daughter was the first one that actually made national news. But back in 2001, we had Shayna Dunkel in Pennsylvania who went into a seizure, who was never supposed to be put on disipramine.
And which, on and on and on. Hey,
let's go. Yeah. I can tell you about hundreds
of them, I'm sure. Let's go quickly to the phones. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Jeannie, welcome to the food chain.
Yes, good morning, Michael. I would like it verified. Who created these mandates? Was it a federal mandate coming down on the state, so the state has to mandate this? This has to be clarified.
Well, the mandate for, are you talking about health insurance coverage?
Mandating payments for these particular diseases for the insurance companies.
That was Assembly Bill 88. It was by Helen Thompson, which most people don't know. Her husband is a former California president of the California Psychiatric Association. Ms. Thompson had that mandate passed through the state legislature, and it passed in 99 for severe mental illness and several childhood emotional disorders that were mandated to be covered.
This is the state of California?
Correct.
Okay. Is it coming down from the FDA, from the federal mandates at all?
No. The feds, the Bush administration had their new Freedom Commission on Mental Health, which mandated universal mental health screenings for all Americans from zero to...
Ooh, they're going to get us all.
Thank you.
There you go.
Wow, Jeannie, thanks for the call. Whew. Okay, before we go to Roy, we're going to take a quick break here. Folks, this is Food Chain Radio. Today we're talking with Carl Hoffauer from the Citizens Commission, right?
Correct.
On human rights. And this is an organization that's around the world. Gosh, you're everywhere. How many organizations, how many different branches do you have?
275 chapters, 33 countries around the world.
And you kind of sprang from the Church of Scientology, but you don't get paid from them. You get your money from individuals who give grants.
Correct. Like many efforts that when the community needs help, it is the church that has many times been the galvanizing force to say to the parishioners, somebody needs to do something, who's going to stand up and do it? I sit on the Silicon Valley and the California State Board for the NAACP. And I can tell you, if it weren't for the Baptist Church and the AME Church, the NAACP would have a hard time accomplishing their mission and goals.
Okay, folks, this is the Food Chain. Give us a call, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Food Chain Radio, talking strawberry-flavored Prozac for children. Woo! 8 million of our children are on these drugs. Right back.
Hi, folks. How many of you out there love to garden? Wouldn't it be nice to grow some of your own food? Or maybe a flower garden would brighten your day. Well, now you can have the pleasures of gardening without all that effort. You don't need a tractor. You don't need a rototiller. All you need is the Knox Garden Box, a heavily constructed, portable, elevated garden on legs that can virtually change the way you've gardened in the past. The Knox Garden Box can be set up anywhere. Yes, you can place it right on concrete. For those with bad backs, you've got critters and gophers, no space or maybe no dirt. With the Knox Garden Box, the therapy of garden is now the prescription for good mental health. The way to find your fabulous Knox Garden Box is by logging on to knoxgardenbox.com. That's K-N-O-X, gardenbox.com. Or by calling 831-461-9430.
Welcome back, folks. This is the Food Chain. Today we're talking about our children, specifically the 8 million children here in the United States and Canada that we are drugging into submission with psychotropic drugs prescribed by psychiatrists and administered by parents. So what's going to happen to those children and to the many more children every year who are diagnosed as being bipolar, as being, I don't know, how many different things are there? 357 reasons to drug a kid. Isn't that right, Carl Hoffauer?
That's correct.
357 reasons to drug our children into submission. So, this is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're all going to open up the phone lines and invite you to participate. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Let's go to Rory. Rory, welcome to the Food Chain.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, Michael. It's a good, timely show. I think what's part of the equation here is that parents are abdicating the responsibility of disciplining their children to the school.
Yep.
And I mean, I know myself and probably a good friend of mine, he would have certainly been drugged up. I heard somebody one time say they would have drugged Tom Sawyer.
Oh, yeah, and Huckleberry Finn, too.
Yeah, also, they would have been put in foster care. Yeah, they would have been zombies. And so I think a little old-fashioned discipline, you know, they took away, or they're trying to take away corporal punishment. Why? I mean, I got my butt licked a few times. Did me a lot of good. I had a dad that was there, parents that were consistent, that were good on follow-through. They didn't let me get away with murder. And I think a lot of what happens is these kids, they're not getting the correction they need, so the guilt builds up, and they start acting out. I've had enough children. If you don't discipline them, get them back into line, they begin to act out. They become a worse problem. You create a little monster. So if you're not disciplining consistently, and sometimes
and
that means... Yeah, and sometimes that is a little corporal punishment. We're not talking about beating them about the head. And, fairly and equitably and consistently as best we can, if you're not doing that, and then you send them off to school, and they're getting all pumped with all this information from the American Psychological or Psychiatric Association, whichever one, it's a, that's what you're, this is the result. And a friend of my son that he met over the summer camp, he's probably a little older, 16, 17, along there, and he wanted to join the Marines, but he can't because he was on Ritalin in school. They don't want him. So I don't know. I don't know if you guys brought that up or if your guests brought that up, but that's pretty significant. These are life-changing developments, and a lot of times parents don't know that.
Well, Carl. Yeah.
Well,
thanks, Carl. Thanks, Rory.
Thank you.
He brought up a. Thanks for saying that, Rory. You brought up a great point. I've spoken with the military recruiters, and the policy of the U.S. military, the Navy, the Air Force, and the Army is that if anyone's on a psychotropic medication after the age of 14. They become mentally unfit to join the armed services. And so these children that are forced onto these drugs, who then want to serve our country, are being barred from serving our country because of the coercion that they were placed on these drugs. And it's unfortunate because they had no choice. Many of these children have no choice. It's one of the things that's terrible about children who are in foster care. When they turn 18, they're emancipated. And right now in the Assembly, Assemblymember Karen Bass has done a great job of trying to correct this corrupt system. But you still have children turning 18 and getting kicked out of their foster homes with no support network. And some children looked at it as, well, I'll go into the military. And when their history comes up that they were put on psychiatric drugs, they're barred from even joining the military.
Whoa.
And the problem is this, is I just got a month ago the listing of how much you get paid when you put a child on psychotropic drugs when they're in foster care. And a child's age 0 to age 4 years old, your average foster family agency gets $414 a month. If they put them in a treatment program, and treatment is usually psychotherapy and psychotropic drugs, but I don't know how you do psychotherapy on a one-year-old or a two-year-old, but you can certainly pour minty-flavored liquid Prozac down their mouth, you'll get $1,565. Now, you tell me if there isn't a financial incentive to drug these children. And that isn't even paying for the drugs, because that gets paid for either through their health insurance, or if the child doesn't have health insurance, they're put on Medi-Cal, so our taxes then pay for it.
Todd, welcome to the food chain.
Hi.
Welcome aboard. Go ahead.
My daughter is now 40 years old, and we had a real serious problem with her. We did put her on Ritalin. And then my wife read a book about
a diet.
It was a diet without any additives to it.
Uh-huh.
No artificial additives. And so we shifted our whole household over to non-additive food.
What happened?
They said it was going to take at least 8 to 10 weeks. We went and visited my sister, and she says, what are you doing? You giving Kelly new pills? She was so calm and cool and collected.
Just getting her off?
We just got her off of all the artificial flavors, artificial sweeteners, artificial this, artificial that, and it didn't have anything to do with sugar, because I was making ice cream. We bought an ice cream maker.
Okay, Todd, I'm out of gas here, out of time, but we'll be right back. Hold on, okay? Folks, this is the Food Chain, Michael Olson. We're talking about drugging our children into submission. 8 million of them we're drugging into submission. Those are just the school children now. Phone numbers today, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back after these important messages. Please do stay tuned. So what happens when we take our children off these psychotropic drugs? I have a person who works closely with a big university, and she says that when the children come out of high school on these drugs and they go into college, one of the first inclinations they have is to get off their meds. They're away from their parents, they're away from their psychiatrist, so they get off their drugs, only they're not prepared to deal with what happens when they get off their drugs. Carl, you ever had any experience in that direction?
Unfortunately, lots of experience. Some of the tragedies that happens with young adults is when they go off their psychiatric medications too quickly, and they don't have the support, both internally and externally, to help them cope with coming off of these drugs and coming out of the mental cloud that these drugs create. But before I get into that, I do want to go back to the last caller, and I'm so glad he brought this up, because in September, just last month, the United Kingdom's Food Standards Agency issued a warning about food additives and food colorings being linked to childhood behavior problems. And they've been warning that if parents have children who are hyperactive, that they need to restrict or eliminate food colorings and additives, specifically sodium benzoate, was part of the study. And this wasn't just one study. This was the third study in a row that England has done looking at the issue of food additives and childhood behaviors.
Hmm.
Now,
but so we feed them the wrong things, they go crazy, but then we drug them into submission.
And drug companies make a lot of money off of it.
Todd, do you want to finish up on that?
I absolutely agree. I was going to bring that subject up myself. I saw it with my daughter. I mean, I know it's anecdotal evidence or whatever you want to call it, but after 8 weeks... we went and visited my sister, and she says, did you give Kelly a new drug? Because she was so calmed down and so...
There you go. Todd, thanks for the call. Going to go quickly here to Craig. Craig, welcome to the Food Chain. Fire away.
Yeah, hello, Michael. Psychiatrists, they're some of the nuttiest, craziest...
Well, there's some good people out there, too. And, you know, with all due respect, there are some cases where I suspect that these drugs actually can do somebody some help. But 8 million children?
Yeah, my question is that don't they have... Aren't there disclosure statements on these drug bottles of the side effects? And you can't... I didn't know that. You couldn't serve in the military if you... You're on these at 14 years old. These recruiters don't like that. So I'm wondering about that. What about the side effects disclosure statement or anything like that?
Great call. Thanks very much, Craig. Carl, what about it? Is there some kind of disclosure that these companies have to make about the side effects of these drugs?
Sure. It's written in medical terms. Hardly anyone can understand it. And it's the product insert you get with any prescription. The one thing that we did force the issue on was the black box warning for antidepressants, and that warning was now expanded to be age 0 to 24. It used to be just 0 to 18. A black box warning is the highest level warning the FDA can issue on a drug until it's going to ban it. And so we are very familiar with black boxes if you look at any cigarette advertisement.
Okay.
Cigarettes have the black box on it, and now antidepressants have that about suicide.
Well, Carl Hoffauer from the Citizens Commission on Human Rights, thank you so much for joining us, and thank you out there for tuning in the Food Chain today. What about it? Do you think we should feed our children psychotropic drugs? I want to thank you all for tuning in. Hope to see you all next week for more What's Eating What Radio right here on the Food Chain. And remember, cheap food isn't.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.